The ABC's Pacific correspondent Sean Dorney was a guest speaker recently at a Pacific Media Business Summit in Sydney. He was asked what he considered to be the big business story for the Pacific Islands. His answer surprised me. Sean Dorney told the gathering it's all about tuna.
Not many people in Australia may realise that several weeks ago I became the subject of a major attack on my credibility when the Fiji regime's Media Industry Development Authority, MIDA, wrote to our managing director, Mark Scott, accusing me of being both unprofessional and unethical. My alleged crime was having dared to suggest in an interview on Radio Australia during the Pacific Islands News Association two-yearly conference that many journalists within the region felt that the media in Fiji was less than totally free. Fiji's Prime Minister, who has been in control of Fiji since staging a coup in 2006, Rear Admiral Frank Bainimarama, that's his new rank in retirement, brought down a media decree in 2010 that is still in force. Amongst other things, it provides for significant fines and jail sentences for media people found to be in breach of a wide range of alleged offences, like running stories longer than 50 words without a byline. Since then, the Fiji Media Authority, MIDA, has also initiated proceedings against Fiji Television News for allegedly broadcasting hate speech. It carried comments from one of Fiji's traditional chiefs at a public meeting saying in reference to the two major races in Fiji that water and kerosene do not mix. But one of the more pleasant things that came out of that Pacific Islands News Association conference was an invitation from the Asian Development Bank for me to speak at a Pacific Media Business Summit in Sydney as a member of a panel where we were each asked to nominate what we considered to be the biggest economic story in the Pacific Islands. I began by telling the Pacific journalists in the room, many of them younger than I am, that when I began my journalistic career way back in 1971, if someone had been talking about something that had happened 32 years previously, they would have been speaking about 1939, the year the Second World War broke out. That was 12 years before I was born, and, to my mind back then, almost prehistory. So I apologise to those present who might have thought that 1982, that's now 32 years ago, was sometime way, way back in the distant past. But to me, that was a really significant year in relation to the topic of our summit session, reporting Pacific business, what is the biggest story. Why 1982? Well, that was the year that eight Pacific governments gathered in Nauru to establish what is now known throughout the Pacific as the PNA, the Parties to the Nauru Agreement. The aim was to try to exercise some control over the economic resource that is most common to the exclusive economic zones of all eight of these island countries, tuna. I was fortunate enough to be one of the few journalists there in Nauru, all those years ago, to witness and report on the signing of that agreement. Noel Levy, then Papua New Guinea's foreign minister, who later became Secretary General of the Pacific Islands Forum, invited me and one or two other journalists from PNG to accompany him to Nauru on the PNG government's VIP jet, the Kumul. The creation of the PNA was not welcomed by some. In fact, the United States was quite cross about the fact that its then three United Nations Trust Territories, the Federated States of Micronesia, the Marshall Islands and Palau, were all intending signatories. All had by then achieved self-government, but they were still some years away from independence. But these three self-governing Trust Territories thumbed their noses at the US and its powerful tuna lobby and joined with the five independent Pacific nations, Nauru, Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands, Tuvalu and Kiribati, in setting up the PNA. American officials who had flown into Nauru to try to talk them out of signing were far from happy at the outcome. In recent years, the PNA has really started to flex some muscle, and island countries are now getting much better returns. But my interest in this big Pacific business story, tuna, was sparked a couple of years earlier than that signing ceremony. It was in 1980 at the Pacific Islands Forum Leaders meeting in Kiribati. At one of the social functions, I spoke to an official from the PNG government who told me of a grand plan to get the Pacific nations together to create what he described as the OPEC of the tuna industry. OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, was then at the height of its power, setting the world price for oil. I sent a radio report off to the ABC and Radio Australia, not identifying my source, but using the information. That created a bit of a stir, but it is exactly what the signing in Nauru 2 years later was all about. Pacific nations trying to take control over what is paid for their tuna resources. It took a while, but the PNA eventually set up its own secretariat, and it's introduced a vessel day scheme where Persena fishing fleets have to bid in something like an auction for fishing days in the exclusive economic zones of the 8 member countries. The current minimum price of a fishing day for foreign fishing vessels is $6,000, well above what it once was, and according to the PNA, the vessel day scheme is now worth $240 million a year to member countries. It's also about conservation. At a recent meeting in Honiara, the PNA agreed on a total limit of just under 45,000 days during which vessels can fish in their waters for this year, 2014, and they'll freeze those days at that level for 2015 and 2016. The tuna catch from the Central and Western Pacific is now worth an estimated $7 billion a year. The Pacific Islands' share of that is growing all the time. Of course, a major problem is illegal fishing. I wound up my address to these Pacific economic journalists with a quote from an interview I did with Transform at the Pacific Islands Forum meeting in the Cook Islands. He says it is tuna that provides an opportunity for island countries to free themselves from an over-reliance on aid.
Once you do that, then you don't need donors to support, build your wharves, your schools, your roads. You can use the money that you get from your resources to do those things yourselves, and then you reduce your dependency on donors. You're not tied up. That to me is the whole essence of being free, drawing upon the reserves of your natural resources to become truly independent.
Transform Angarao, a Pacific Islander, helping island nations take control of their tuna resources. This has been Sean Dorney for Correspondence Report.